you for joining us at TMBR Podcast. We hope you enjoy our show as much as we enjoy recording it. You can subscribe to us through your favorite podcast feed and follow us at TMBR Podcast on Instagram. You can also leave comments, suggestions, and go rate us a 5-star on Apple Podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode 101 of Throwback Music Video Review Podcast. And tonight we will be reviewing A Flock of Seagulls, I Ran So Far Away. I Ran So Far Away is also released as I Ran, quote unquote.
Hey, parentheses. You have to do the parentheses thing when you say so far away, right?
Air quotes.
So far away, parens. It's a 1982 song by English new wave band A Flock of Seagulls. It was the third single from their self-titled debut album. I Ran's music video is directed by Tony Van Den End.
He's done a million videos.
Oh, yeah.
Not too many, like, big ones. They're, like, all, like not too many that are,
there's
like,
a couple of hit songs, for sure,
but
yeah,
for how many that he's done, it's, like...
Yes. And eclectic.
He's done some Killing Joke videos. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, he's done a lot of stuff.
And, yeah.
His website's really nice. Go to his website. Check it out.
Oh, he has a website, eh?
Mm-hmm. It's just his name.
It's all Dutch, though.
Dot com.
So I don't know if you can...
It's in the Queen's English.
Okay. And as of this recording, the I Ran music video has 154 million views on YouTube.
You'd think more, huh?
Mm-hmm. It's
it's split up. There's probably a lot of people who post this, right?
Yeah. Probably.
Throwback Music Video Podcast is a podcast where we look at older, even new videos, mm-hmm, and we watch them, we research them, we look at them, we judge them, usually about the videos that are around their time, are just what we like, what we don't like, and we, at the end of the podcast, we decide if we're going to keep them or we're going to throw them back.
Okay, guys, what is your history with I Ran?
I Ran So Far Away. Oh, man. I don't know. Well, most recently, actually, Louis and I went to one of these summer festivals, the beautiful downtown L.A., Pershing Square. Mm-hmm. And it was a medley of 80s bands with, mm-hmm, some would say one-hit wonders, but I would totally disagree because a lot of these bands had actually multiples, mm-hmm, really good songs. But mm-hmm, Flock of Seagulls was, yep, one of them. And we did actually see them. Any experience from...
They were one of the most professional bands out of the whole thing. You could tell that they're like on a touring schedule, and
correct,
like, they had a full band,
yes,
and they knew their shit. Like a lot of the other bands, I mean, you could tell, mm-hmm, that they're on like on a summer tour thing too. But like, no, Flock of Seagulls came with everything. They had like light set up. They had everything going on.
Yeah. So if you weren't able to attend, this was a free event. All you had to do was sign up on the
RSVP for the Pershing Square.
Correct. But they also have the option of a VIP where you paid a little extra. And you get a little closer. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line was they performed along with Dramarama. When in Rome, Men Without Hats. And, you know, it's the interesting part to me, they played all the hits, that's for sure. But Mike Score, who was the only original member that played and performed, of course, he's, mm-hmm, the main guy, he didn't talk.
Oh, no.
He didn't acknowledge the audience at all?
He did eventually, but for the first 45 minutes.
It was the bass player who was talking.
And kind of engaging with the...
Interesting.
Very interesting. It was so, mm-hmm, strange. But they performed all the hits. It sounded really good.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful night, summer night in Los Angeles. You're surrounded by the skyscrapers in Pershing Square.
They were also really playing their instruments. Like,
absolutely,
some,
yes,
of the other bands had backing tracks where, like, you know, some of them were playing, but, like, they did have a pretty strong backing track. Mm-hmm. No, they were actually playing...
A full band.
Full band.
Yes.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
So that was a treat. That was definitely a treat. I didn't expect to actually experience them, right?
Right.
But of course, any other experiences, they've always been.
Did you expect to see Pedro from Napoleon Dynamite there?
No, that was a treat too, Al.
He was there?
Well, I guess the connection would be When in Rome. They do have that in the soundtrack.
So he Pedro comes out. Yeah, he came out during the When in Rome set.
That's awesome.
And he announced When in Rome. Yeah. And then also, you know who was there too? His twin brother.
That's right.
Who I met after the show. Who was dressed in some crazy getup? Like there was like this one guy, this non-housed individual, that was messing with him and calling him Pedro. But then, and he was just like, "Oh, thank you, thank you." But I'm like, "That's not Pedro. That's his twin brother," because Pedro was wearing a suit or he was dressed really nicely.
That's correct. He was. Yeah.
And then so
he introduced the band. Now,
yeah,
he introduced Wayne Rowe.
And When in Rome headlined this?
They did, yes. They were the last band.
How weird, right?
Who would you have headline instead?
I'd have Flock of Seagulls headline this. Probably.
Well, I think it seems like Flock of Seagulls might, because they were like the full band, and and then I don't know.
It's just the same.
But yeah, they did headline in the traditional form headlining. But
yes.
But
usually the last band is not, you know, it's really late.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't really call them headlining. So yeah. I would imagine Flock of Seagulls really, technically, would
they
be.
Played the sweet spot.
Yes. Oh, okay. Yes. So yeah, like remember back in the day, you thought, you know, you're the last band playing. Is the coolest thing.
Oh, no.
No, that's the bitch.
The last band playing is helping clean up the bar after.
There's six people, three custodians. Exactly. Yeah. And then the parking valet guy. Four of those. And then that's it.
But this concert was off the hook.
Yes.
I mean, it was packed.
Yeah.
I mean, luckily for...
Yeah, it's a free event.
Dude. Luckily for us fellas,
we have
good day jobs.
Yes.
We were able to pay for the upgrade to the VIP a little bit.
Yeah.
But more elbow room.
Yes.
Everybody else in like the free section, oh my gosh, it was like sardines down there, dude. Yeah. It was
a lot of people.
Super spreader event, huh?
Yeah. Yes. But you know what? What's interesting? It was very cool vibrations, man.
Everybody was
laid back. No problems. Everybody was mature. Everybody was enjoying it, dancing. Because in between bands, it would have like all the you know, they would have, basically a club.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It would have the DJ playing cool music. And everybody's just dancing and having a good time. I couldn't believe how they could even set a thing like that up.
Yeah.
In the middle of a beautiful downtown LA.
Yeah, a lot of people always talk shit about downtown because, like, in Los Angeles, downtown is, it's not like New York where it's like a bustling, you know, like it's
basically like a Mad Max.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty very Mad Max there. Yeah. It's always been like that since I was a kid.
Looking for water, yeah.
And
it's like the.
But Pershing Square is a beautiful place, you know.
Yeah, it is.
You know, I remember going there before and it was always really cool and they have ice skating there and stuff.
It's not like the Billy Idol video, dancing with myself.
No.
Oh, no.
How about you guys?
Well, for me, it's Iran was always a part of that 80s compilations, you know. It's a mainstay in those. It's always been in my purview. But the thing is that my first experience with Flock of Seagulls was a song called The More You Live, The More You Love.
Yes, which was their biggest hit in their homeland, UK. Yeah.
So, like, I saw the music video then back in the Philippines, you know, in those video shows I keep referring to. Yeah. And I'm thinking like Flock of Seagulls.
It's like the tar of the Flock of Seagulls. Like they went to the Philippines. Yeah.
they filmed it at it looks like the Ireland. You know, something like that. Yeah, those rocks in Ireland, those crazy the crags of Ireland. It looks like that's where they filmed it. It's a simple video. It's just them on the beach, you know, and just waves crashing.
But this would be their second album. You're right.
Yeah,
it's not on this album, right?
No, okay. No.
Oh, right. That's true. So when I saw that, I'm thinking like, you know, these aren't like your conventional TV friendly musicians, right? And I remember as a kid thinking like the drummer reminds you of the guy from Dawn of the Dead, the zombie from Dawn of the Dead.
What?
I don't know.
Like, that's where your mind went, huh?
You gotta imagine. I was like 10 years old, right? So, you know, so I always associate a drummer with the guy from Dawn of the Dead.
You're like, hey, that's my friend from Dawn of the Dead, the zombie guy.
So, yeah, the drummer, the singer's brother. Yeah, like I just thought, like it's so weird. Like, anyway, so that idea always stuck in my head. So every time I see the drummer, I just think of Dawn of the Dead.
Zombie number 7, is that what you think?
Probably because I saw Dawn of the Dead, you know, the 70s Dawn of the Dead.
During that time.
Around that time, too, when the video came out. So my mind just made that quick association.
Now, that's funny. You guys have this album? This was a classic thrift store
album. I do have this album. I do have
it. Easily found it back in the 90s, right?
Yeah, it's in the collection.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really go back to playing the whole album until, like, recently, and I realizing how amazing the whole thing is.
Oh, no, I put Space Age Love Song.
It was.
Space Age Love Song on. Mm-hmm. Once it's over, I take it off and I put on, you know.
Wishing? My poor guy.
No, but it's true, right? Like, you have to come back to it and realize, oh, okay, now I get the whole thing.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, you go back to a lot of these 80s bands, especially the first album, they're very good. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of good songs on there. Just for some reason, that hit got big.
Yeah.
But a lot of their songs are... It's an eclectic mix of songs that they've probably been working on since the 70s.
Right,
and they just,
right.
You know, and then after that is, you know, I mean, that's how every band is.
The studio pressure comes in.
Well, you know, after your first album, your stuff starts getting watered down. I mean, you've written that first album since you were first started playing your instrument until that time.
You've had that in the chamber for
years. Yeah, you've
had
all those songs in the chamber for years, you know, and so, you know, the next album is going to be... A watered down version of that because you haven't been working on it for 15 years.
And then you're right
out.
You've been signed, so there's pressure. It's got to be good. It's got to be better than. Mm-hmm. But there's always that sophomore slump.
Duran Duran's running down your back. You know, you gotta pick it up.
But they're a very quintessential 80s band.
Oh, completely.
The look, the sound. Mm-hmm. You know, the videos they made. Mm-hmm. Right? How about you, Louis? Like,
Well, more so than most, especially with the 80s thing. I think, you know, I heard them when I was a kid. My mom, you know, with my parents were in the sweet spot of the 80s, so they were playing all this music. So, but I remember all this stuff as a kid. I was a...
Heavy airplay. Both music and the videos, right?
I was hardcore into MTV as a kid. You know, it was like my babysitter. So I did watch this video a million times. And it's funny that when I was a kid, I thought of it, I was like, oh, this is cool, you know, and looking at the video. But like now you see all the mirrors moving and everything like that.
It's it's kind of funny. All its failings.
I mean, as a kid, you don't see that stuff, you know. Right. It's just like fucking magic, you know. But like...
Because we kind of saw what goes on behind the curtain. Now we start looking for those things, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we get old and we get cynical and we're like, hey, you know, we get all evil. But there's a sweet young kid, you know. Of course, you know, this is
I was here thinking, like,
the greatest,
you know,
80s songs.
This guy's a zombie.
Well, it's one of the greatest new wave songs, I would
say. Absolutely.
That. Yeah.
I mean, you got
it. Definitely made a mark, indelible mark in the new wave scene. But you know what? More recently, I shouldn't say this is like 20 years ago, but we all saw the bands reunited.
Yes.
And I kind of actually just stumbled on that, and that actually made me go back to Flock of Seagulls. Mm-hmm. But that was a very revealing, you know, like entertainment documentary kind of style of making.
I remember watching that when it first came out.
Right.
As a kid, and I was like, oh, this is cool. And you know, I was always like kind of, I would watch it because I wanted to see who they're going to have next.
Right.
And then watching it again. I mean, when I was a kid, I was like, oh, you know, like, just do it. And then as an adult watching it, I'm like, I might get these guys, you know? They're just trying to work, you know? They're just trying to do stuff, you know?
Exactly. And throughout the 90s, 2000s, they almost became a joke, right? Well, not almost. Actually, they were.
Oh, completely.
Not just a hairstyle, but many people probably think they're one hit wonder. And that's one of the things why we do this podcast.
Well, the cynical 90s turned the 80s into a joke until the 2000s, and now we're like, it's back.
The 90s took themselves a little bit too seriously, where they were making fun of the previous decade. But
didn't you hear that reality bites, right?
Exactly. Exactly, man. You're 100% correct. You know, and then you think about, but when you come, you get older and you kind of mature a little bit more, and you're like, you know, these are musicians.
No, yeah.
You know, they had aspirations of like making it big, and they did have the talent, man. You know, but anyway, back to the thing, right? We all saw it, and we saw their demise and how things didn't work out, and it's like,
a bummer. Yeah. Oof. Well, I mean, like the guitar player, he got whacked out on goofballs, you know, you know, he got
nervous breakdown.
He was way too young. The lights were too bright, I guess.
Drinking and probably a little bit of coke or something.
I mean,
you know?
Think about yourself being 18, 19.
Yeah.
What were you doing 18, 19? I mean, I was still in high school, probably, you know.
But if I was world famous at 18, 19?
I don't know how I could pull it off.
I would have imploded.
No, exactly.
Yeah. I would have had every STD and every drug in my body.
Right. I mean, thinking about it, not being able to experience it, you'd be like, yeah, that's a dream come true, right?
Yeah.
But for somebody in reality, you know, this is a great, like, actual scenario, like a real, realistic scenario where, no, not everybody can really handle it, you know?
No, there's been times when I played in a band, and we've had, I don't know, 2 gigs in 1 week, and I was dead after that.
Right.
I can't imagine playing every single night.
You blew your adrenaline.
From city to city. And
waking up in the middle of the day and going to sleep in the middle of the night or almost the next day, and then waking up and doing it over again, and it's just like a cycle. You don't know where you're at, what day it is.
And these guys are playing like 200 gigs.
It's crazy,
year. You know?
But that's the life of Mike Score, though. He's been doing this nonstop since I can remember.
The saddest moment... Not that long ago, when you gave us tickets to go see Flock of Seagulls for Christmas.
Oh, yeah, for your birthday.
Yeah. Or for a birthday or something. And then we found out that they were free tickets that you got. And then I was like, oh, my God, they're playing for free? Like, that was the saddest thing I ever heard in my life.
And where were they playing?
At Montclair.
Montclair.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
You didn't give Ryan tickets, too? You gave Ryan tickets, too,
right? No, I only got those ones.
Oh, for me? Oh, and I couldn't go, because I was going out.
Yeah, the party you go to.
They're playing at Montclair for free. They're giving the tickets away for free. No, there's a bar.
There's a nice venue. There's actually a nice music venue. Yeah. And it's in the Montclair Plaza, though. But it's one of the call them the wings of the mall. It's like, but this one's, I forgot the name of it, but it's a very nice venue, like Canyon something.
Yeah, and a lot of bands play there.
Yeah, a lot of bands do play there. You know, it almost has a House of Blues kind of feel.
Right.
So
especially the new House of Blues that's like in a mini mall now, right? That's like, have you been there? Or no?
I've been to the one. Well, I've been to the one in downtown Disney.
No. Now it's in like some like mini mall kind of like.
Oh, really?
No. Well, not mini mall, but just like
a strip mall.
Strip mall. It's a strip mall, yeah.
So they played at this. You didn't get to go then?
No, I couldn't go, and I felt bad, and I was like, "Oh, I'm sorry, Al. Like, I can't go." He's like, "Oh, don't worry about it. I got it for free, anyways." And I was like, right. "What?" That broke my heart. Was like that they were playing for free.
How did you get it for free?
No, I was walking on Montclair Plaza, and I walked past the venue, uh-huh. and like some girls were just like, "Hey, would you like free tickets for wow. this show?" And I'm like, "Oh, okay." Oh, and they're man. Like, "Oh, Fox Eagles." I'm like, "Oh, like I think okay, like I maybe Louis might like it, you know?"
Hey, Louis's birthday.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, "Yeah, cheap old present. Woo! Everybody wins." Oh, but he didn't get to cash it in.
Yeah,
so.
I didn't get to cash
but,
it in.
But you know, like I'm sure Louis would have had a better time with Flock of Seagulls than the party went to. Oh.
But no, but see that, I mean, I think now they're on a high again. I mean, they're, but I'm sure that there was a lot of lows there, you know?
I mean, they got that little pick-me-up in the early 2000s, thanks to the Grand Theft Auto Vice City.
Right,
soundtrack.
Correct.
Oh, that's I mean, that's video game
And
money.
They've been in a bunch of commercials, you know, also the music's been used. Mm. And, you know, it's funny, like I said, like they kind of became a butt of a lot of jokes. Like, they're always like a reference, you know, mm-hmm. not just the hairstyle. And I think that's one of the things he was really pissed off about, Mike Score himself, you know.
Yeah.
Like, it's like the hairstyle exceeded, like, the music. And, like, what we're saying is how amazing the music is.
Well, I mean, that's mm-hmm. one of the things that killed them, too, is, like, they were the kind of new wave band that was a hairstyle
right.
instead of more of a thing where, like, Duran Duran, they were handsome guys. You know, right. they weren't haircuts. They were handsome dudes.
Exactly.
Our Devo were just, like, weirdos, you know? Like, and you could move on from that, but just from just the haircut, once the haircut's not cool, the next year, you're done.
People
you know?
Outgrow it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, you got to associate with a fad, so to speak.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he was like a hairstylist, right, or something like that? And
He owned a salon. They practiced above the hair salon where he worked.
Right.
Where he owned, I think, yeah.
Like him and the bassist, right?
Right. And, you know, he was really pissed because a lot of the interviews, they were always asking about the hairstyle. That was kind of like the focal point of the interview. So,
what do you expect, though?
I know. But
they probably didn't expect it to be that.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, a thing.
Like, well, would you... Okay, let's take this to another band that was not... I mean, they didn't start off as a haircut, but I'm sure they got a lot of questions about the haircut. Mm. Let's say Robert Smith from The Cure, right? Mm,
The look.
Like, his look got a lot of that, but it did endure.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Is it because he kept it and didn't try to change it?
Well, I think because there was a scene behind it.
There was a whole, look.
Yes. Makeup and the.
There was a thing that extended out instead of like just like a new wave thing where the next summer it wasn't a cool thing anymore. Right.
And
I
felt like a lot of the underground scene was, you know, kind of took it and then ran with it in their own very different ways.
Also at that time, The Cure was underground and they were top 40.
Yes, that's true.
Flock of Seagulls were top 40 and they're, you know, that's a big difference.
And that's one of those things you really have to come to grips with. It's like, are you going to be okay? Because they made a lot of money. They toured. You know, they lived the sex, drugs, and rock and roll thing. But the enduring part, right? That's the part that's kind of...
Well, that's the thing. Do you want to cultivate a scene like The Cure from, like, 1976 until now?
Yeah.
And, I mean, they didn't get the money until...
Now.
Wait until later, you know? Or do you want that fast money quick?
Exactly.
And jump on a scene, you know? Like, that's where you throw it up and, you know, what do you want to do?
You know?
Here we go, I guess.
The thing is, that, you know, like, their music holds up.
Oh, totally.
Right.
Flock of Seagulls' music holds up.
I think so.
Now.
Well, like, to the average listener, though, that's...
They probably was still associated with the 80s, yeah.
Right. To the average listener, it's just a one-hit wonder.
Mm-hmm.
Well, wait a minute. They have a lot of good songs and actually a lot of hits, like, where the charted, right? Mm-hmm. And, again, I think it would do everybody a good service here if they went back and listened to it. And, you know, part of the podcast is, like, not only just promoting the music and giving it a little bit more legs so people can sharing this to others, our interests and the stuff that we're interested in. Because, again, man, I can't get it. It's good music. And I think it deserves a second, third, fourth, fifth listen for people who thought that there was just like that one song or that look or that hairstyle, whatever. You know?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people who would agree with you. They're not a one-hit wonder band.
No.
But the thing is, like, as far as, like, the collective, you know, mainstream, where it's just they are considered a one-hit wonder.
Sure.
The thing is, everyone's a one-hit wonder until you really deep go a little dive on their material.
Then I mean, did you
ever... Find a few gems in there.
Did you ever consider it's time for the pop quiz?
Oh, and yeah, I guess it is.
You guys feeling studious or what? Because it's time for the... All right, here we go, ladies and gentlemen. You guys ready?
Yes.
You got your glasses on?
I got my...
waiting for the...
You got your visors?
Some outer space trivia.
Oh, here we go.
Is there any Aurora Borealis involved in this
the
trivia?
The closest star is...
We'll find out. Here we go. You guys ready? I don't have a lot, but here we go.
C-14-3.
All right, here we go. Number one. All right, so Iran peaked at number 9 on the Billboard Hot 100 in October 1982. Here's my first question. Which of the following artists was at number 1 during that very same week? Is you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. A, Eye in the Sky by Alan Parsons Project. B, Jack and Diane by John Cougar. This is before the Mellencamp came in. This is before the John Cougar concentration camp came in. Or C.
Is that a joke from someone?
No, that's an actual punk band from the 90s.
Oh, really?
Yeah, John Cougar concentration camp.
I never knew that.
Favorite band.
Really? A punk band from the 90s?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So funny.
Or C, Who Can It Be Now by Men at Work.
Ooh.
And lastly, your last choice, D, Gloria by Laura Branigan.
Oh. Which reminds us, a friend of the podcast passed away not too long ago, too. Mm. But I would say, Who Can It Be Now, Men at Work.
All right.
I'm going to say Gloria.
Excellent work, guys. You're both wrong.
Oh!
That would be B, Jack and Diane.
Oh,
Alan Parsons Project, number 3. Who Can It Be Now, number 2. And Gloria.
It's one of my favorite songs ever.
That's Jack a great,
and,
great song.
Jack and Diane was like bang, dude. Like it, it must have been. It was probably on the charts forever.
Yeah, it was. It was a big, it's a huge hit.
Yeah.
I mean, you
remember that stupid music
time,
video with the clapping hands and the little.
Yeah. Oh, la, 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 la.
I'm sure he'll be doing it soon.
But I've never seen the video for Eye in the Sky, though.
Is there a video? I'm not sure. That's one of my go-to.
I remember seeing the video.
I have never seen it. But I mean, you know, preceded that song, though, before Eye in the Sky comes in album.
What?
It's a song called Sirius, which is the Michael Jordan Chicago Bulls
theme
song.
Oh, when he comes in, right. That's correct.
And then it segues into Eye in the Sky.
Eye in the Sky, yes. This is one of my go-to karaoke, because that's a great, great song, Eye in the Sky.
It's mellow, it's relaxing.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful. All right, guys, I don't have a lot, but you better get your oil skins on, because it's time for the lightning round. All right.
Oil skins.
So, really quickly, so you guys know, right? The lads were just forming the band. The initial name of the band was not A Flock of Seagulls, of course, right? Mm. They got the name, of course, from the Stranglers song, 1978 song called Toiler of the Sea.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was even mentioned in some of the documentaries that we were watching earlier. But the term A Flock of Seagulls is a term or a collective noun for a group of seagulls.
Uh-huh. Right.
You get?
Yes, yes.
So
yes.
Another example, of course, is a group of cows would be called a...
mule cows, I don't know.
A herd,
a
right?
Herd. Okay.
Or a group of wolves would be called a...
Pack.
A pack.
Okay, got that one.
All right, so true or false, if the following collective nouns are the correct group
like
terms...
This. Love it, love
for
it.
...for the following animals. Are you guys ready?
I am ready.
All right.
I was born for this.
Louis, are you ready for number one?
I am.
Here is number one.
Okay.
A parliament... of owls. True or false, if that is the correct collective noun?
I'm going to say true.
You are correct. A parliament of owls.
That's pretty awesome.
Hey, it's a learning podcast.
Yeah.
Parliamentary, my dear Watson.
I'll try this one. How about number two here? A prickle of porcupines.
That is a false.
You are wrong. That is true.
What? A prickle?
A prickle
that's
of porcupines.
That's the cutest thing I've ever heard in my
that's
life,
right? That's adorable.
Louis, you like
that's
this
that's
one?
Way too cute. Okay. That can't be true.
It doesn't seem right, right? But that's the thing. That's the beauty of the lighting round.
This is like, I'm getting a bunch of prickles on my...
Louis, you like this one? A stink hole of skunks.
No way.
That's false.
Are you sure?
I'm sure.
Then you're right.
What is it?
A stench.
A stench.
Close
okay.
enough.
A stinkhole.
That would catch on. That would be like.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And by the way, these you know the ones that are real are true. I mean, obviously, yeah. Right? I'll try number four here. A snatch of clams. Don't laugh. Hold it all in.
If you laugh, it's wrong.
Oh, that can't be true. That's a false.
Sure?
Yes, I'm sure.
All right, you win.
Is it a catch? Is that the real thing?
No, it's a bed.
A bed.
A bed of clams.
Yeah, that's
oh, yeah,
correct.
A bed. Okay. Hearing that.
How about number five, Louis?
Yes.
A conspiracy of lemurs.
I'm trying to, okay, I don't know this, but I'm trying to go off your right, wrong, right.
It's patterns.
My patterns?
There's chat GPT AI in the making, Louis, right here.
My stink hole of patterns? Yeah. That doesn't exist.
Is Ryan
I'm gonna say. I'm going to say that's false.
No, you're wrong.
Oh.
That is true. A conspiracy of lemurs is the actual clip.
I swear to God.
Are you ready for this one now?
Mm-hmm.
How about a sphincter of gerbils?
way.
Or you want gerbils. It's up to you.
A spade.
Gerbil or gerbils?
Not true.
Are you sure?
I am sure.
All right. You're right. They're actually called a horde.
A horde of
gerbils.
Imagine a horde of gerbils coming for your sphincter. I mean, that's just insane, right?
That was inspired, of course, by Richard Gere himself. And the next one, how about a cauldron of bats?
Can't get more goth than that statement.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it sounds right, but I have a feeling it's not, because what does the cauldron have to do with bats other than a witch? I'm going to say it's wrong.
You are wrong.
Oh,
it is. Cauldron, cloud, or colony of bats.
Oh, that has to be new, right? I mean, when did that get put into Webster's? Or
let me check. 1379. I don't know.
Cauldron of bats.
What's Encyclopedia Britannica? What is Encyclopedia Britannica?
I looked it up on fucking Wagnalls. I don't know.
Okay, sorry.
Al?
Mm-hmm.
A pussy gaggle of platypus.
Man. It's too alliteration perfect. I think it's true.
No, you're wrong.
It's
a pandemonium of platypus.
That would have even been harder.
That should have been pandemonium of pandas, right?
Yeah, you'd think, right?
But platypus.
People are crazy that write these things, like me. How about you, Louie?
Okay.
How about a sausage fest of peacocks?
That's gonna be wrong. Come on.
It is wrong.
Okay, I was gonna say.
I think in a different multiverse there was a band called Platypus.
Pussy Gaggle of Platypus. Al loves that one for some weird reason.
Pussy Gaggle of Platypus.
Pussy Galore Gaggle of Platypus.
Like naming a song called I Walk or something, you know?
But a collective noun for peacocks, Louie and Al, would be muster or ostentation.
Oh, I like luster.
How ostentatious.
Crazy, right? These terms? All right, Al, is it your turn?
I got a couple more for you. Off with that one.
How about a gaze of raccoons? G-A-Z. I don't want you to get confused here, but a gaze of raccoons.
I think that's true.
And you are correct. Excellent work, Louie. A shiver of sharks.
I'll say, yeah.
And you are correct again.
What?
Wow, that's
a
cool.
Shiver of sharks?
Yeah.
I always thought the Murder of Crows is the coolest, but I guess there's a lot of cool ones.
Dude, the Shiver of Sharks? Yes. They haven't made a movie called The Shiver of Sharks yet?
Right?
I'm going to have a new thing. My new thing is like, man, there's so many people in here. What is this, a cauldron of bats? Cauldron of bats?
See, here at TMVR Podcast, we learn things.
We learn things.
All right. And lastly, Al?
I should put this under education now. Right?
Yeah, seriously. This is my favorite.
You should put the more you know.
This is my favorite true one, Al, is an ass load of mandrills. And of course, these are the red butthole mandrills that we're talking about here.
Ryan, this is like the third time Ryan's mentioned those guys.
Does he bring up mandrill at every single one of his
days? Of course I do.
He does, right? We did the where's your hair at?
It's Mandrill Gold City.
That's Mandrill, Monkey of Mandrills.
So, what is it?
An ass load.
No way, that's real.
You sure?
I am sure.
You're wrong. No, I can't. You're right. It is false. They're actually called a horde as well. So.
A horde of mandrills.
Aren't you writing a screenplay right now, like Planet of the Mandrills instead of Planet of the Apes? It's just pure mandrills.
Oh, that's all I have for you guys.
All right. That was
good work. You guys didn't score about a C or a D.
Nah, I got them all wrong.
Not too bad.
I'm surprised there wasn't any questions about Aurora Borealis on at all. I'm disappointed, Ryan.
No, that's a good one.
What's the fun in that?
Okay, let's talk about the music video then for Iran.
Al previously mentioned, directed by Anthony Van Den End.
Van Den End.
Right? And he lots of music videos.
So many.
Yes. Yeah,
Let me give
many.
You some of his highlights right here.
Go for it.
So
highlights for kids.
Mercury Rev, Darkest
Weird,
Riding,
right?
Which is weird, like a newer one. Chaka Khan, Ain't Nobody.
Yep.
Oh, that's Shao Kahn.
Yep. Tom York and Drugstore, which is actually the cool looking video.
Wow.
Simply Red, The Pretenders, Mike Ness, Story of Your Life. Right. Social Distortions is like, you know,
Ball and Chain. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. So, Lou's favorite man.
Favorite band.
Tattoo on his
Louis Chain Wall just popped out all of a sudden.
I have that tattoo.
His swing dancing moves. Some meatloaf action.
He did something called Guns N' Roses, Photographic History of Guns N' Roses.
I have no idea.
1994.
It's probably a compilation video compilation.
Right, probably, yeah.
Killing Joke, right? We mentioned that, right? Yep. Shriek Back Nemesis.
Oh, have you seen a video for that?
I have actually, yeah.
It's a cool video. Cool song. I love that song.
You mentioned Holding Back the Years, Simply Red, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Holding Back the Years.
Which is a great song, I think. A lot of the cult, right, Louis? Mm-hmm. Tons.
It's a TV documentary. That's what the Use Your Illusion tour TV documentary for Guns N' Roses. He did a lot of. Oh, wow.
He didn't direct.
I actually watched this one, The Ballad of Sebastian, The Bold Light Weekend. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Alice Ferry Band, Transmission Vamp.
Oh, they're awesome.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Lots of them, too, man.
Some Cat Stevens, some Bad Company.
Cat Stevens. It's like one of the last things you'll see in that list, right? But Cat Stevens?
The thing is, he's like...
Give me whatever you want to give me.
Is that a job? I'll take it, right? It's one of those kinds of things.
He's a jobber, man.
Yeah, man. I'll do the same.
Pin me, pay me.
Right?
He's like almost like a blue-collar director. He's just, you know, and it's so many years of doing
And let's not forget, he also did the other Flock of Seagulls hits. He also directed he's very prolific. Mm-hmm. A lot of contribution to the music video industry. Mm-hmm. Just an aside here, this video was actually made for £5,000, and after calculating that with today's inflation, it is $8 trillion. No, it's $28,710.72. That's how much.
Does the video look like it's? You can make it for $28,000. Exactly, right? I mean, I could make that video for $500 now, right?
Right. Seriously, yeah.
Well, maybe you got to pay the talent a little bit more.
Also, it wasn't on VHS. This is actually video, right? Like, I mean, this is on film.
The film?
Like movie film? Because it looks pretty good. It doesn't look like VHS.
Yeah.
No, definitely not. No.
Yeah, it's not like camcorder.
It's actual film. So
it's film. It's film.
I mean, that's expensive right there. You gotta.
Yeah. You take that into account.
Directed. I mean, you have to.
Get the caterers going.
It probably took just a couple hours to pull it off after setting up the actual scene itself.
It's probably processing the film and then, you know, whatever the director
So a lot of it is post, not like during the actual filming.
I don't think so. They shot it and then the after effect.
I mean, the makeup on those girls, though, probably took a little bit of time, right?
But again, so it's pretty much starts with...
The riff with the echo.
And really quickly, Paul Reynolds, super young dude when they started the band, 18, 19? Mm-hmm. And to this day, so many like musicians and fans are saying he's just one of those whiz guitar players. It's like, you know, some of the stuff he was playing with the music at that time, and still today, like, it made an impact on that sound that he made. Mm-hmm. He was good. Basically, he's a very good guitar player, And from the documentary of Bands Reunited, he's listed as a session. Like, he just contributes to, like, bands who hires him.
Yeah, he's a session guy.
Yeah. He doesn't really have a band himself. He doesn't really produce any music.
Probably care less about that life.
Right. Man. It's more him. He just loves the craft and probably just people, hey, you're a good guitar player. Let's play some stuff here, you know? Mm-hmm.
Probably his thing. And there's no pressure, you know? He doesn't have to go on tour. He doesn't do any of that stuff. He stays, you know, goes to the studio back. And
exactly,
He probably has a couple studios that he has a good connection with. So, like, when someone comes in, they need a guitar player. They're like, oh, we have this guy, you know?
Right.
And just brings him, like, yeah.
So the video is, we can discuss this in 1 minute. I mean, there's nothing a lot, but there are a few key things that I feel like that needs to be mentioned. Of course, obviously, first of all, just the set itself is the whole aluminum foil everywhere, right? You've got mirrors.
Reynolds,
you've got them
just
playing.
Killing, right?
And according to Mike Score, he said that, hey, they asked us to, you know, well, we went to go to the department store, got a bunch of women's clothes. We put it on, some makeup. We got our instruments, and we played behind it, and then kind of, you know, just
filmed it.
Yeah, filmed
it. Basically, the studio is like, this is, we got to start doing music videos now, because that's the new thing. Mm-hmm. You know, MTV just came out like a year before. If you want to be big,
right,
we got to get in this medium.
Yeah, and to the fact that this video is what catapulted them to this stardom, really. Mm-hmm. You know, it's that heavy airplay, of course.
Right.
And, you know, like, in my personal opinion, it's nothing special, but the idea behind it is much more special, that because they created this video with the music and during that time, that's what shot them into this stratosphere of, you know, like, of fame, right?
You know what, too? When you watch this video, I mean, it's a lot different, but it's not as different as the Buggles video. I mean, it's a band playing.
Exactly.
They have the new wave girls, and it's very structured around like kind of like the same exact thing, which propelled the Buggles and then also, you know, propelled these guys too, because it's like a whole, it's like a little scene, you know?
Yeah, it's like a theme, basically. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the sci-fi theme.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And everybody's bought in, the whole band. You know, like, sometimes you see bands and like half the band is like bought into the band, and then there's just like two dudes who just look like, they're not going to put on the makeup and stuff, you know? And
like Black Hole Sun, right?
Yeah, there you go.
But they were having fun.
No, they're having a lot of fun.
You know, Frank Monsey playing the bass, he was like...
He's always having fun, though.
Exactly.
That guy,
that's what I like about him.
Yeah. The drummer on the end, he was like craving some human flesh, right?
What? You see, he's turning more and more pale for each and every scene.
I forgot about your...
You can get over it.
Stupid memory I made for myself.
Because if you watch Dawn of the Dead, you'll know exactly what zombie I'm talking about.
Not Night of the Living Dead, right? Not Bob.
Not that one.
And again... Yes, you're right. The same theme of like a heavily made up female characters, right? Mm-hmm. But you know what? What's interesting here is because I never really got it in the beginning. You know, you couldn't tell it from the album cover, but it's a conceptual album in which they're dealing with like alien invasion.
Talking about like prog rockish kind of thing?
Yeah, where there's it's thematic, right? From beginning to end. Lyrically, visually, sound.
Pink Floyd going on.
Yeah. And the thing is like, again, to the average listener, you know, and I was an average listener for a very long time until I kind of realized, oh, that's what they're trying to go for. Mm. You know, and again, this is their first album, right? So, but there was a theme, there was an idea behind everything. Right. And the whole thing was alien invasion, right? Listen to the lyrics, like flying saucers, right? And this one in particular, of course, like he's like in love with this woman. But in the end, towards the end, right, he's like trying to run away because there's like this fear of like, you know, being captured by these I don't know, mysterious aliens, I guess.
UAPs, right?
Well, that's the thing.
I changed the term.
He is kind of like a sci-fi nerd, right?
Yes, yeah.
He talks about that. Yeah.
Because basically, yeah, that they got the inspiration of the song from a poster, right? Of flying saucers.
Exactly. Yeah.
And a couple running away from him.
Their new album is like all based around the Orville. I don't know if you know the TV show. The Orville. I'm just kidding.
You got me there. I was like, wait, because you look so freaking. Serious.
wasn't the title of their new album Skinwalker Ranch?
There you go.
No, but see, then again, like I said, it's layered, right? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't. Sometimes you
I've always thought it's like, you know, like, oh, it's how tongue in cheek they have seagulls in the background. They open, you know, when the song starts. That if you actually hear the original remix, not the music video remix, where you hear seagulls flying.
Oh yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And then you get the bass, that sweet bass in the beginning.
But, exactly. Yeah.
So like, I can imagine that as part of that whole, you know, like theme of the album,
the setup.
You know what's weird though is like the album cover doesn't reflect,
not at all,
any of the album.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
It's not a good reflection of the album.
Definitely not. Yeah, no,
the content, right?
Yeah, it's like a windowsill with like seagulls flying.
Yeah, like, it's like, you know, they hired some artists. Like, okay, there's a band called Flock of Seagulls. Make an album cover. I'm like, okay.
No, it looks like
listened to any of the songs.
Well, the thing is, it's not bad, but does it relate to what the concept was? Not exactly.
I mean, it looks like the Giant and Levington seagull cover, like a rejected cover, right?
Maybe, right? But yeah, like, I mean, how would you design it? Even I'm curious how I even know how I'm going to design it.
Well, because the thing is, it has nothing. It's not spacey at all.
Yeah,
and there's no sci-fi, you know, like designs or like, any.
That's true. How would
allusions
Peter Saville?
To it?
I have no idea. If I was like their manager, I would say, "You guys wrote a sci-fi album. That's very cool. You guys are dressed like this. Very cool. Your name doesn't go with your album. It doesn't go with how you guys are dressed. What are you going to do? Put, you know, like spies in disguise and put like little robot things on the seagulls? Like, you know, what are you going to do? You see that cartoon spies in disguise? Will Smith plays a pigeon and he's wearing like sunglasses. So
Will Smith is one of the pigeons, right?
Yeah. So like, I don't know. I like, really, how do you get Flock of Seagulls, a Flock of Seagulls,
right,
the name, into a sci-fi looking?
I feel like they chose
Peter Saville to take care of, man.
It's, well, then he would just put some abstract thing.
Right. I feel like they chose an angle, right? I mean, it's, you know, they thought, well, let's go with the look, right? That's a little more accessible to the public, right? Mm-hmm. People, especially during that time, 1982, 83, whatever. Not that, you know, I think spacey aliens, that's still interesting.
No, it is.
But I think they kind of went more for the look, that the haircut, the clothing, the style.
And then
but
subsequent
that,
videos,
yes,
they're all
and,
sci-fi.
And the videos, yeah.
Even
yeah.
that looks very sci-fi. You
yeah,
know?
Exactly.
It looks very super sci-fi, yeah. But the name, the Flock of Seagulls,
right,
I don't understand how that relates to that. I mean, it probably, maybe it doesn't, it's just a name.
Yeah.
But like, how do you do it? I mean, if you're actually trying to market it, you know, how do you reflect that in that? I don't think you can, but I, you know, whatever they did.
But
I
these mean, days,
that album
even,
sold a million copies.
Yeah, so, a lot. Yeah. It was a huge hit. Mm-hmm. I'm saying these days, you're right. It's more of a conceptual thing where every aspect relates to that one topic or one whatever, right? Well, back then they didn't really think of it that way, you know. So it's kind of like jumbled and it's all over the place.
Well, their record company didn't think of that. I mean,
they didn't. Yeah.
There's a lot of companies that did, but they didn't. Not to digress from the video, but. Do you guys think about like how they got so big in America, but they weren't really that big in England?
Not as.
So much so that they actually moved to America?
Yeah, you're right.
Wild, right?
Yeah. Well, I wonder why.
It happens all the time with some musicians. You know? They just
rocky?
Get big on one in the country. Yeah. The thing is, there's crossover appeal, at least with Iran, because that guitar solo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people love their guitar solos, right?
Yeah,
and
sure.
This is one of the greatest guitar solos for any new wave song ever.
Right.
And you got two of them, too. It's like borderline level. At least for me, it's almost up there with like Slash's guitar solo in November Rain. And
yeah.
Which, you know, the director also got some...
Yeah, he has some Guns N' Roses influences.
That is interesting, huh? How you can... Not from your native land, right? Mm-hmm. And you still... But it happens a lot. It happens
because
a lot.
Iran didn't get as big there as it did here.
Right. Yeah, their biggest hit was in England was Space Age Love Song.
Yeah.
Oh, no, Wishing.
No, was it Wishing?
Yeah. Oh, it was Wishing?
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's like their slower songs were big. Their faster songs were big here.
Mm, maybe it was too rock for England's liking.
Maybe. Or maybe they just knew him. Like, oh, I know that guy. He does my hair.
It's like... Right?
Yeah. I get my fade from him every Sunday.
There's a reason, too. Like, Depeche Mode wasn't as big in England as well than they are here in America.
And then they moved here, too.
Yeah. Screw it. Let's go move here.
In Bauhaus.
Yeah.
In Morrissey.
That's true. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess... It's the sign of the times, you know? So people just kind of relate to the music more in certain parts of the world, right? You guys know Rodriguez? Rest in peace. He just passed away. Sugar Man?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
for Sugar Man, right? Yeah. He passed away like this past week. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he was huge like in South Africa, and that's the only reason why they made a documentary because, you know, you know, he's like this beacon of like hope for these people. But here, he never made a mark in the 60s and 70s, you know what I mean? So it's just how, why, right?
Yeah.
So it has to hit somewhere, apparently some stuff hits in America more than others.
I mean, like in the Philippines, you know, we got our share of new wave acts or English acts that are only huge there. Right. That's it. Right. And we think since that was our world back then, we thought it would be huge everywhere. When we go here, it's like, what? Who? What?
Yeah. And look, you know, we always reference Philippines. Obviously, well, not one. We're Filipino. But the other thing is, Louis is an honorary Filipino, of course. But the other thing is that for some strange reason, a lot of the 80s, right, it was huge.
Mm-hmm.
Japan. Philippines, right?
Yeah.
But not in America or not even in their home country.
Well, America's
England,
very rock.
It's strange, right? Mm-hmm. But it's, I mean, massive fan base where, like, it's so big that they reissue a lot of the music that was created only in those countries because, you know, there's so much demand for it.
Well,
capitalism for you.
Mm-hmm.
Although we are in America, we are on the west coast of America where there is a humongous middle part of where there's a lot of people.
Just a lot of, and the big void, the great wide open.
That big void is the one that, you know, doesn't embrace a lot of the hardcore.
The coast is a lot more diverse.
Rock and roll's devil's music.
Yeah, doesn't embrace Britpop, you know, doesn't embrace, they only embrace rock, you know, like, so.
Especially back then.
Yeah.
That's true. So, but again, you know, the video, it's a one layered. There is a part where he's kind of like
he's searching around, right?
Yeah, he's lost.
He almost knocks down a mirror.
He's like, he doesn't know what's happening. He's trying to get away. He's disoriented.
Then these girls are kind of like coming at him, you know, and they're like, I'm scared of these girls. But it's kind of like how the song is about,
right?
You know, he likes a girl, but he's so scared of his own emotions, he's running away from it.
Tells the tale of the singer seeing an attractive woman. He becomes anxious. Wants to run away from his newfound feelings, but he can't forget about her.
The director is very good. I mean,
abducted.
He has the whole video. It's on a good tempo that's going with the song, and the whole thing is moving and it's going forward, and there's no like weird hiccups in it. He's very, very competent. You know, I mean, he's done a lot of music videos. And he was doing music videos or doing kind of documentary stuff before this too. But I mean, it's very, very well made. Like it's constantly
synced.
Yeah,
it's synced well. Very well with the music. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah.
And everybody's into it. Like
that's what made it kind of, you know, like it picked up with the audience. You know,
well, that's the thing, too. When we went to go watch them live, they're just kind of standing there.
Right.
I mean, you know, and you're like, you watch the video and you're like, they should be moving, right?
Right.
You know, this whole place should be spinning, you know. But
well, what do you think about Louis, about his keyboard playing?
His monophonic keyboard playing on...
one key.
His monophonic keyboard, but he's playing polyphonic.
Yeah, polyphonic.
No, I mean, that's just like a thing. I used to have that keyboard.
Exactly.
It's a cool keyboard. I used to have
it. It's a Roland Monosynth.
Yeah.
but like at first, I had no idea. I thought it was like, it's like a microcord. You know, this is before I really got into synthesizers when I saw this video. And I was like, you know, there's a really cute keyboard that can play Iran. And your drummer looks like a zombie.
But the drummer's also playing drum pads. He's not he's playing practice pads. He's not playing, like...
He's just practicing those triplets.
Yeah. There's no
paradiddles are just being practiced.
When he gets that tom solo, that's a lie?
It's a lie, sorry. Those are just practice pads. Silent practice pads.
Oh,
live, it would just go... Yeah. Wouldn't be so
They
loud.
Want you to think that he's having like some kind of white Nordrum thing, but nope, it's just practice.
I did catch this on one of the documentaries talking about that part where he goes on his little tom solo, and the drummer was, I don't know, like he was just like letting off steam and just start doing that solo, and they thought, oh, let's put that in the song. So that's how they got that little...
Which is a good idea, because there was nothing else really.
Yeah, that was a good breakdown.
It's a good break before the guitar.
Like, I played that on the keyboard. It was like, it's very simple, but somehow it sounds so complicated when I...
Well, that's the thing with music.
Sometimes when I hear it,
simplicity speaks more than, you know, like the complexity, you know? It's like sometimes you just gotta, you play something simple and like it echoes, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's like it's one of my favorite guitar solos ever.
Yeah.
Was that, you know, was the two solos from this song.
That's right.
You can address you can see the cameras and the reflection covered by this mountain of foil.
Yeah, the windows moving and shaking as they're kind of spinning around, right?
All the stuff going, they must have like fans in there or something, right? Because there's like stuff flying around and stuff too.
Very Monty Python, with everything's moving, all the background, like there's nothing stable, you know? But see, that was not the point though, right? That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's not about that. It's about the music and the mood and the sound that was happening in front of you.
I mean, that stuff moving in the background probably adds to the motion of the thing too.
Sure,
everything's moving like a, you know.
And again, you know, if you're thinking about the whole concept album of like alien invasion, you know, it creates fear, right? It creates like this mood of like uncertainty, what's going to happen, you know? So, I mean, of course.
This is also a good video for someone who wants to learn how to make videos.
Yes,
because
absolutely.
When you think about making a video or making a movie or something like that, you tend to like think too big.
Right.
When you don't really, you just have to look at the frame of the camera.
Right.
You just need to fill the frame.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to have a whole entire room that looks like the thing. You just need enough to fill the frame, and it could just be a little box that's standing right in front of you, and you know, put mirrors up, and that's it. You know, you don't need to do all kinds of background, you know?
Yeah, you're thinking Stanley Kubrick when you should be thinking iOS like 9 or something, you know? Like, it shouldn't be, what are you doing? You're not going to be able to create those kinds
of visuals. You're not going to make the war room from Dr. Strange.
Yeah,
though,
exactly. Yeah.
So wait, like in the way they shot the mirrors in this, is the camera spinning or are the mirrors spinning?
Well, look, the room has to have been spinning for those things to move.
Right. Mm-hmm.
If the room wasn't moving itself, then the mirrors and all that stuff would move,
I don't think
right?
it's a room. I think it's just like a small platform.
It's a platform.
Somebody was moving it around.
Yeah, somebody's moving around, right?
The lights were outside of the thing that's moving, because you can still see it, right? Like the spotlights itself was covered with some foil. And again, technically, it's not the most sound kind of, you know, like production, but I think they were trying, what they were trying to 5, get across.
5,000 pounds, right?
And they probably did it in one day. I would imagine. It is insane.
I mean, frankly, I think that's they overspent.
Right? Yeah.
Like, they could have made that video for way less than 5,000 pounds, and like they probably just use the rest on whatever.
Right.
Well, they have to hire lighting people. They have to hire, you know, you have to have people.
In comparison to Video Killed the Radio Star, which one had the bigger production, you think?
Video Killed the Radio Star, because they actually built a set.
Right.
Yeah. Set, explosions.
The girl.
Little effects.
And the girl, you know, floating some of that tubes.
Yeah, they needed like a harness for her.
Correct.
Yeah.
This one didn't have any effect. Like any practical effects whatsoever.
Well, no practical effects. They had the little overlays of sonic sounds and the flashing star on the girl's eyes.
They did have like 2 years of CGI that they added to it.
Paintbox. Paintbox makes another appearance.
Quantel
Paintbox.
That would have added like, you know, another 50.
I mean, David Bowie's song came out the same year, right?
Yeah, but look at the budget.
Yeah.
What, 250 Gs for that one, right?
Yeah, it was the most expensive music video.
Yeah, the most expensive computer in the world running the most expensive computer program.
It's hard to compare, right?
How would you compare this then to Clouds Across the Moon by Robin? It came out 3 years later.
Well, Clouds Across the Moon cut some corners by copying.
Yeah.
Or at least using
the actual
footage. I don't think that's fair, you know.
They did like an Ed Wood thing,
That's true.
Pull the strings, you know. Like the bison running, you know. They just use some old footage, right?
I'm just like, yeah, because since I'm trying to find like comparisons, you know, like for this music video.
The same era.
You're right.
I think this video took what they did take from Video Killed the Radio Star.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Clouds Across the Moon probably took from this video. You know, it was like a learning experience.
Yeah, because there's a lot of themes. Like they had a little sci-fi phase, you know, and Clouds Across the Moon kind of
has a weird sci-fi thing, too.
Yeah, so.
And you're right, a lot of early 80s music deals with sci-fi.
That's probably why we associate the 80s with, you know, the spacey kind of.
Well, they grew up with Star Trek and stuff. That was what they watched. And, right. You know.
Like Duran Duran's.
Well, Star Wars 2, right?
Like, came out, yeah. Oh, that's true. 77, yeah.
And all the way up to the 80s, 84 or whatever.
But like, yeah, like Duran Duran around this time came out with, well, Planet Earth, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then,
but Girls on Film isn't that much farther than this.
Oh, that's true. That's
yeah. So I mean, right. We're looking one at their. One, it's not. I don't think you could look at the band at the time. You got to look at the first video that they made because that's where they have no money.
Right.
Planet Earth.
Yeah. Was
they hardly. It's like their
that.
First hit. You know. It's very. You know. By the time they get a little bit bigger, and then by this time, Duran Duran is probably already doing pretty big.
Right.
Big
they burned some awards.
Rio already came out
the
world.
Yeah. They're already. You know, making their Indiana Jones.
Exactly.
But yeah,
take a break.
Shall we?
Should we take a break?
All right. So, okay, we'll be right back after these messages. All right. It's time for some notable YouTube comments.
Is it already?
They are there.
All right. Here we go. We got a couple for you guys today. Here is the first one. Let me get my reading glasses. I'm an old man. This one is from, I think it's an at. As Al said back then, last episode, a lot of these are at Taleins, T-A-L-E-I-N-Z, one from 2 months ago. And she says, Mother's Day here in Queensland, Australia, headed down to the beach and noticed a bunch of seagulls on the beach. Told my 15-year-old that back in my days, there was a band called Flock of Seagulls. Had to come watch the video. Two little hearts after that. I'm just thinking about the conversation after, like, fuck you, mom, or something like that, right? Something weird like that, right? Like, who gives a shit, right? That's funny. Like, it's like
Muriel's Wedding, but yes, like, she's like an adult now.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I mean, she has kids now, and she's just like,
thinking,
hey, you want to watch this video that your mom used to watch back in the day?
Look at those seagulls.
You know, Australia has a seagull problem.
Like,
a huge seagull problem. They literally designed French fry holders to repel, quote-unquote, seagulls. Like, the special kind of foil, but it failed. Seagulls still kept coming for their food.
There's no stopping a seagull.
Seagulls. Just when you thought your chips would never be safe from those pincer-mouthed, chip-addicted feather reptiles, Hungry Jack's had a breakthrough. Introducing the pack that scares gulls. Printed on holographic paper, the glittering surface reflects light and protects our new thick-cut chips. Released in gull-infested areas around the country, finally Aussies can enjoy their thick-cut chips in peace. The pack that scares gulls. Impeccable packs for irresistible chips.
All right, and here's another one by at Rick Williamson 9248 from 2 months ago, and he says, back then I wanted hair like his. Now that we're both in our 60s, I do.
I do?
Well, I'm guessing that he's talking about the mic score.
Oh, now they have the same kind of hair.
Louis' invention of a hat with a ponytail built in.
Put it on the back.
Imagine if you flips his baseball cap backwards.
And the ponytail's in front of you.
His
face. Oh, boy. Oh, that's funny.
That is funny. I mean, he was notorious for wearing hats, but when we did see him, he wasn't wearing a hat. He was he let the ball go.
He said, you know what? It's all about the reality.
I saw an interview of him on KTLA 5, one of the morning shows, you know.
Of Mike Score?
With Mike Score. It's on YouTube. Right. And yeah, you know. Like,
to promote the Moncler show.
He's promoting some show. Might have been the Moncler show.
Did he have the ponytail or
no? No, he was straight up bald at that one.
Okay,
no
cool.
caps or anything.
Right.
He's embraced it.
You know, it's hard because you're a rock star, right? And then,
he's not the conventional rock star. He knows it.
Yeah, but the problem is that, you know, a lot of this was initiated by the hairstyle, and then now it's been removed.
Yeah.
So what do you? You know what I'm saying? So it's difficult, right?
I'm sure,
kind of marry the two.
Like the cheap morning show questions are going to be about
some of the hair.
The guy addressed the
hairstyle.
It's
and
come
and
up.
He kid, you know, he was being very clean and cordial. It's like,
right.
Yeah, you know, it's like, well, it's all gone now. You know, he's like, he was being very chill about it,
yeah.
Right? That would be awesome if he actually wore like a nice professional wig, like
exactly,
they would wear
yeah.
on, you know, Game of Thrones or something, and have it all like spiking it up still.
Game of Thrones.
You know, well, a lot of them wear wigs there,
yeah,
right?
Of course,
it's like,
yeah.
It's like, you know, I'm just saying. Like,
that's so funny though.
Like a professional.
He has Jon Snow hair.
Yeah.
A flock of seagulls.
Uncle Benjen hair.
Benjen.
Uncle Benjen.
Tito Benjen.
That was favorite character.
Theo Benjen. Theo Benjen.
Tito Benjen.
All right, gentlemen. And my last one here. from at Big McClarge Huge 883. Can only be good, right? With that name from 3 weeks ago says, love this song. I was born in 86 and remember the song playing from my dad's stereo or on MTV on our big Trinitron. Good times. I miss the days when you could dress like the
weirdest
manager Target has ever had and still be a rock star. What? Also, by City, yo.
By City.
There you go. Yeah. That's what he says. And I'll end with that.
All right, guys. I ran so far away by Flock of Seagulls. Would you keep it or would you throw it back?
All right, now I'll ask you. I'll go ahead. I'll give it to you.
I'll tell you this. It's like after watching how Bauhaus spliced, well, it's completely different genres and styles of music, but the way Bauhaus, well, the creator of the Mask video, put that one together, probably in a smaller budget than this one. And that one, I don't know, just is more engaging. But granted, this became iconic because it's a Flock of Seagulls and the song was huge in America. So I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's a fair comparison to really, you know, the more I
think about it. The genres were far different.
Yeah, yeah, far different. And this wasn't exactly the Mask aspect, wasn't a representation of the song. This was more of a representation of a song. It's a reaction also to MTV being big. Mm-hmm. So we got to do this. So we want to be mainstream. So this was an approach of being mainstream. Bauhaus was just an art project. This one was to be mainstream. But comparing it to like Duran Duran videos, you know, like I was saying, like,
sure.
I mean, bigger, I think they're just as skilled musically as Duran Duran was around that time. But I don't know. I find this effort very weak. I mean, technically it is weak, but they've never done a music video before. You know, we've done a lot of podcasts where like it's their first music video, like Journey. That one was like really bad. But this one, like, I think it's a really bad music video. The effects are amateurish. I did like the little sonic thing when the guy's playing the guitar, the little sonic waves that's happening there, with the overlay. But I thought the flashes on the future geisha's eyes were pretty subpar. But yeah, this one, I can't keep this video, but I do. It's one of my favorite songs ever. It's just, it's not a good representation of it, you know? So I'm throwing this one back.
You throwing something back.
I actually threw something back. Can't believe it.
That makes perfect sense. But look, let me just say, first of all, I think this is an excellent example of less is more. And I also think that this is an inspiration for people who are just starting. But overall, okay, I was divided. I wanted to throw it back, but I felt like I couldn't really throw it back, you know. So I'm deciding to kind of keep it. And yes, I am. My actual answer is yes, I am going to keep this video. You know, there's certain music, and I think this time of music video making, you know, it's very primitive. And as Forensic Files would say, it's in its infancy. It's in the stages of infancy. DNA was in its infancy stage. So I just think that, you know what they really needed?
Okay. I thought you were surprised.
It's hard for me to throw it back because of its impact, right? Because they created that. And how cheaply it was made and how how fast it was created, but was still able to catapult this band that just started, came out of nowhere.
True, but the thing is, everyone does talk about the bad parts in this video.
Sure, yeah.
You know, if you look at the YouTube comments, they do mention it. So it's like, you know, if the director probably maybe had more money, he could have cut a few bits, you know, and he can waste more film, so to speak. Because I'm sure film was super expensive back then.
My argument is that this became iconic.
Yeah, yeah.
And the reason why it became iconic is because this is what the budget we had, and we gave it out, and it was effective. And just for that, I think it's, for me at least, it's worth keeping. Because there's a lot of other videos that were like, well, we had the same budget, and it was also iconic, but it was still shitty, right? Mm-hmm. So it didn't do anything more for that band or for that particular song. So that's my reason behind it.
Okay.
And again, back to the infancy. No, I'm just kidding. But you know what? To the people listening, please give the album a listen, man. Mm-hmm. Because I just feel like it's one of those albums that you would just like, oh, you know, yeah, I know Flock of Seagulls. Yeah, I know Iran. I know Space Age Love Song. The whole album is amazing, beginning to end, and it's 46 minutes of running time. It's an amazing feat that they created, and I think it's well-deserved, you know, that they're still being talked about today. So kudos to them.
All right.
Good take. Good take. As for me, yeah, you know what? I put it into perspective like I always do, is the band into it. They're there. They're
having
complaining.
Fun.
They're having fun.
The curriculum.
It looks good. It's very effective. I mean, the video probably helped them sell a lot more records, especially in America through MTV.
this is their first album. They have no money. $5,000 probably all went to the, you know, what they used to film it with, and then the director, because he was already directing stuff, you know. So I'm gonna keep this video. I think it's actually it's not too far off from Video Killer Radio Star. That is a couple years before that. They were already kind of like famous musicians making money. They already had money, and they used Paintbox Pro, which is a very expensive thing. It looks like a shoestring budget for these guys. And it's probably one of the most iconic videos from the 80s. You know, it is a very, very iconic video. And I think for that, I'm going to keep it just because of, you know, the kind of class of what it is in new wave history, you know. It is a janky video. It is, on top of, you know, watching it, it is a good look into what the 80s was. And of everything, you know, the 80s was politically and everything, you know, it was very fake and stuff like that, you know. Yeah. And it does reflect on a lot of what the 80s was, you
know. If you were trying to explain it to a 13-year-old in 2023, watch this. This is what the 80s was about in its early stages.
Yeah, yeah,
it
exactly.
It makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm.
There was a line in SpongeBob, it's called "Everything is Chrome in the Future." And I think it got its start from this music video.
Oh, really? Everything is foil in the future, really.
But is it, you know, it is as good as it is funny.
Exactly. It's,
yeah. And it, you know, and the song helps, and that the whole band's into it and they're doing it, and I like it. And it's not, you know, where I threw back like the Journey one, because it's just kind of cheesy, and they're kind of almost kind of not mocking, but like kind of like, you know, mugging the camera. These guys are serious, man. Like, yeah. They're seriously into it with their shades on. They look fucking cool. And I think it looks cool, yeah. And, yeah, I'm going to keep it. But I understand why someone would throw it away.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
It, you know, hey. Most, but I think the thing, most people would throw it away.
A lot of it, too, you know, when we get to this portion of the show, a lot of it, too, you know, I kind of want to weigh it with the factors of the band, their history. And it's like, sometimes, you know, you kind of feel for the people that produced, that created the history behind it. You know, it's like, you understand it, you know, like, yeah, okay, I get it. You know, like, so, and again, you know, you're just trying to be objective and like keeping it and throwing it away. But again, there's a lot to weigh, right? And you have to kind of measure it with what was happening during that time, but perfectly understandable whether you keep it or you don't keep it. But yes, absolutely, man.
I just want one scene where the drummer is being like also tormented by the girls. Everybody else got tormented, but the drummer.
Or he just throws the sticks away and starts eating everybody because
he's a zombie. Yeah, he's like, in your eyes?
Yeah. He's like, realize that memory fantasy of mine.
Someone wants him to be a zombie so bad.
I don't know. It's stupid.
Psychosexual Al's fantasy.
He's a cool guy, though. I mean, if you watch the, you know, again, the VH1 documentary, he's a chill dude.
He's a plastic guy.
I have no idea, though, why. We still don't know. It wasn't really described
in that. Siblings, man. There's always going to be
The
Noel
and Liam Gallagher, you know, the Kinks. Yeah. You know, there's always a brother rivalry.
You know what's interesting about the documentaries? When they actually get together as a band,
right?
The mom shows up.
That's right.
And
she was like, you know, all I want is my boys to be kind of, you know, like getting along and stuff. Just like a real mother would, you know?
Right. It's like, I'm glad they're finally getting along,
right?
You know?
It's so cute. So awesome. It's like, shut up, mom.
And they're like, like 50-something already.
Yeah, 30. She's like, well, you know, when I was young, there was a band called Fox.
All right. That concludes the episode. One throwback, two keeps.
Louis, you have a surprise for us.
Oh, it's my turn next? Yes. Oh, was I supposed to come with a video? Oh, just kidding. So, for my choice on the next video.
What, episode 102? What do we got?
Episode 102. I'm going to do the 1986 hit, maybe new energy, our pop, electric pop hit, New Shoes, Point of No Return.
Wow.
Wait, New Shoes, Point of No Return? How does that go?
I'm at the point of no return.
I don't think I've ever heard this song. I know New Shoes. I can't wait.
You know that song, yeah.
Not this one. Okay. All right.
Yeah, I Can't Wait video is pretty boring. I like New Shoes. I like the Point of No Return videos a bit better. Because
The other song, the other hit, was kind of like the... Yeah.
All right. Okay, then we'll see you next time.
Thank you for joining us at TMBR Podcast. We hope you enjoy our show as much as we enjoy recording it. You can subscribe to us through your favorite podcast feed and follow us at TMBR Podcast on Instagram. You can also leave comments, suggestions, and go rate us a 5-star on Apple Podcast.
Founding member Mike Score, does that song rattle in your head at all times?
It rattles in the bank.
Yeah, there you go.
That's the right answer. The best answer. Good for you.